Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Thomas Frank Carr. T. Frank, it's that time. We're approaching spring football, actual football. How excited are you?
I am very excited to have at least morsels of something to talk about. This week, it's Penn State Pro Day again, by the way, coming up on Friday. So that's coming up. And the start of spring football happens on Tuesday, depending on what you're listening to or watching. This is coming out on Tuesday on the YouTube channel. And I know, Jim, it's regular time on Wednesdays on the radio. So we have either heard from James Franklin or we're about to hear from James Franklin as he opens up spring football on Tuesday. And we're going to take that information plus the 10 minutes a week we get at practice and stretch it out over 7 full days. So at least we're not making stuff up anymore. It's no longer let's rank things or speculation. You know, the people that have the inside info, like guys at BlueWhiteIllustrated.com, they're going to have the actual what's going on with spring practice. So I'm very excited to get all of that rolling again.
Well, I'll tell you what, T. Frank, even just a morsel of information, I'll take it. And if we have to stretch that out to 7 days worth of information, I'm fine with that. It's still football. I miss it. I'll take it. So let's start talking. Let's do a bit of a spring preview. Let's talk about what we need to see with this team. And the big story for me, both sides of the ball, it's the fact that there's new coordinators. That's what's going to be different. Let's start with the offensive side of the ball. I know we've talked about it a bit before on this show, but it's Andy Kotelnicki coming in. What have you seen? I know you've watched his Kansas offense. You even went back to his Buffalo days. What have you seen from Andy Kotelnicki, and what indicators did you get for what we're going to see from him now that he's at Penn State?
Yeah, and I think it's important to talk about the Buffalo stuff as well, because product of circumstance is a big part of what he had at Kansas. And having athletic quarterbacks that can run all the way back to his first year there, he designed an offense around those characteristics. So there are things that how does what we just saw and the productivity that we saw at Kansas, the explosive play metrics we've broken down, how does that translate to Penn State? I think the run game, there's some sticky, got to figure those things out this spring. And I wrote about that earlier this week. That's something that I think is super interesting. I think they can get it done, but there's going to be elements of that part of the offense that are still going to remain a mystery until probably kickoff against West Virginia. But I've been thinking also about the vibes, Jim, as the kids say, as now a officially not a young person. I'm going to start saying as the kids say, what is the vibe of this offense? And, you know, some of the things we've heard from players and coaches, and I think things they didn't necessarily mean to say, this is going to be a team that huddles. They're going to be in the huddle. They were in the huddle at Kansas, so it's not like it's a big secret. But what they did previously was maybe they huddled or didn't huddle with Mike Yurcich, and then you'd get everything that we know you got with that offense, where they'd get to the line of scrimmage, they'd line up in a formation, they'd pretend to snap the ball, and then they'd do the look to the sideline thing. And then they look back and Drew Aller would change something, or he wouldn't change something, or he would change something anyway. And then, you know, so there was a plotting effect to that offense. They are going to use different tempos, different ways of breaking the huddle to catch the defense off guard. And there's going to be a lot more activity pre-snap with this offense and some of the shifts and motions we've talked about previously this offseason. So it's going to feel very different. I know we've had the conversation of, what are they calling things and keeping a lot the same? And there's a lot of similarities and people got, I think, a little bit touchy about that. That's more about the nomenclature, what we call stuff. The actual feel and vibe of this offense is very different from Mike Yurcich.
I like that. Change the vibe, T-Frank.
There you go.
I'm worried about you. When you start shouting at the clouds, though, I'll really be get concerned about you. Well, let's talk about this because I found it interesting. You'd always talk about motions and shifts pre-snap. What is Andy Kotelnicki looking to accomplish with those?
I liked, it's fun to call it this. He's trying to break the defense. He's trying to find rules that the defense has and put not just players, but the rules in conflict. So, for example, if you have safeties that line up on a certain side of the field based on formation strength or, long side, short side of the field, they will play with that. They will, at least what we saw at Kansas was they'll line up in one formation and they'll shift, which means two or more players going in motion at the same time, where the offense has to reset before they snap the ball. What that does is for the secondary, it can change who their eligible receiver that that player is supposed to cover. And then in the running game, it changes the gap assignments for linebackers, defensive linemen, safeties, maybe slot corners or corners, depending on how much they've shifted or what the formation is. So it affects the balance of the formation. It affects the fabric of the defense. And a lot of times the defense can handle that, but it just takes one time for a guy to make a mistake or to not be ready or not be ready at the snap. And suddenly he's panicking or he is making a decision based on a conflict of now he's got to choose what he's supposed to be wrong with. And those are the areas where I think Andy Kotelnicki's creativity of studying the defense, knowing their tendencies, assuming some of their rules, and then forcing them to break some of those rules is where he is creative and where I think his strengths lie.
One of the big concerns is let's start at quarterback, T-Frank, because I believe a lot of people think, and I think I'm one of these folks also, this offense will probably go as far as Drew Aller takes them. And the quarterback, most important position, a shift from Mike Yurcich to Andy Kotelnicki, what effect is that going to have on Drew Aller?
I think it'll have a positive effect overall. And I tend to place too much credit and blame and pressure on the quarterback, and it is a team game, and having a strong running game can help a quarterback. But as we saw last year, Penn State had a strong running game and it didn't help the quarterback. So this is where Kotelnicki should come in and create and play off of the run game more effectively with some of those things we just talked about. But one of the things that, to dive into some of the specifics of what motion can do for you, that I think Penn State tried to do last year, but they just weren't as effective at it, is isolating your best receiver on a subpar coverage defender, whether in an extreme case that is a receiver on a linebacker or more likely a receiver on a safety, and not the safety they want you to be on, by the way. So that, teams have a field safety and a boundary safety. Generally, there is the coverage safety and the run defense safety, which is why Penn State's defense is so special that they have two guys that can do both. But a lot of teams, they want to hide players in coverage because not everyone has the same strengths. And Andy Kotelnicki does a great job of isolating players and singling them up in mismatches, and creating those opportunities creates better options for the quarterback. Another area that we haven't talked about enough is about RPOs. And this is the tricky part, is any play, any run play where there is a receiver running a route is technically an RPO. So you can have an RPO that is just the most basic of routes. And there was a lot of, if I could characterize it this way, Mike Yurcich's offense was a lot of short routes that were option plays off of a read option, where a tight end is running into the flat, or you have a slant or an arrow route or something very short and near the line of scrimmage. And that bears out in the data of where their RPOs were thrown last year. This is not that. This is especially what you see going back to Buffalo, is the RPO compared with the outside zone, the running concept, creates the opportunity for some explosive plays on the backside of running plays, because you're stretching the defense laterally and then vertically with an RPO. So that creates the opportunity for more explosive plays. And Jason Bean, who is not a five-star passing talent, but was a confident thrower and put the ball down the field into these looks, he threw for nearly 500 yards on, I don't want to call these money, easy throws, because you still have to be accurate and on time and make the right decision. But compare that to less than 200 yards for Drew Aller last year. So he doubled the amount of yardage on RPO throws, which are a one read play where Drew Aller isn't having to go to his second progression. He's not having to, he's having to read maybe, I think even I would say one defender. Andy Kolnicki wants this to be a very simple read for the quarterback where you're reading one defender, run pass, you make the decision, you throw the ball or you give it to the running back. And that is an area where you're creating some easy yardage, confidence for the quarterback, the offense, hopefully, you know, in this situation, nearly 15 yards an attempt on RPO throws. So these are almost explosive plays for the offense, just getting 14 yards on what is essentially a first read, right? So you, it's a one read play, but this is where we go into talking about Drew Aller and his first read, second read talents. This gives him the opportunity to not have to do so much mental processing on every drop back. So that's an area where I think he can take a big step forward and it'll seem like a massive thing, but it's actually very simple.
Well, both of us were talking about how much we place on the quarterback, but obviously he's throwing to somebody. Let's talk about the wide receivers. For the last couple of years, we've been talking about the wide receivers not able to get separation, that there have been issues at that position. What will Andy Kotelnicki do for them? Plus, let's face it, Julian Fleming is now added to the mix.
Yeah.
Julian Fleming, Andy Kotelnicki, those are the variables for the wide receivers. How is that going to look different?
So it is interesting because, again, we're going off of primarily from the data, or no, exclusively from the data, what happened last year at Kansas. So we've seen him craft an offense where tight end is the lead receiver and an X receiver is the lead receiver. And last year, one of the major benefactors of his offensive scheme was Luke Grimm, the slot receiver. They didn't have a ton of speed. Just looking at them on film from their boundary, their X, not boundary, their outside receivers, their X and their Z. And Luke Grimm is a good football player. He, you know, looking at some of the information about where they generated explosive plays, they generated explosive plays from the slot on 24% of their pass plays. That on primary targets where they're targeting the slot, where that's where the first read of the play is. That's really good. So Keandre Lambert-Smith has an opportunity to be the guy that we thought last year he could be, which is that guy in the slot who is going to make big plays, be explosive, but doesn't need to be the volumetric number one receiver. Julian Fleming comes in. He provides a stability, I think, similar to what Kotelnicki had at Kansas, and maybe even a little bit more. Maybe he's more of a plus possession receiver. But the wild card to me is just the overall depth of talent at receiver where there are these guys. And it's not just Keandre Lambert-Smith. Slot targets in general, tight ends, number four receivers. You know, I think Caden Saunders is a guy who could have a massive step forward with some of these things. But I also want to leave the door open to the outside receivers are also going to see an uptick in productivity if everything translates one-to-one from Kansas, because they also got more explosive plays than the Penn State receivers did last year.
All right, T. Frank, that's going to be it for quarter number one. But we are not done with the offense. I want to hit everybody's favorite topic when we come back, the offensive line. Stay tuned for that.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number two. He is T. Frank. I am Jim. We are talking Penn State spring football. We're starting our preview on the offensive side of the ball. We've talked about Andy Kotelnicki. We've talked about quarterback Drew Aller, of course. We've talked about the wide receivers, of course, there also. But if you're a Penn Stater following the football team, one of your favorite topics, T. Frank, the offensive line.
Yeah.
And what's amazing is it feels like a couple of years ago, that was the beginning, middle, and end of the discussion oftentimes with the offense, the frustration with the offensive line. You know what? They're going to lose three starters, but I'm not nearly as concerned about the offensive line as I have been in the past. It seems like they are actually building something there.
Yeah, it's young. Once again, it's young talent, and I think that is the question of, are they going to arrive early? Are some of these guys going to exceed expectations? Anthony Donko is the guy that feels like he's on the fast track to doing that, where he is a second-year player, where he's in a direct competition for the starting right tackle job after being a left guard for most of last year and then playing tackle for a month before the bowl game. So there's still some projection there. I think his bowl game was very encouraging. I also saw him fall over twice in pass protection, and I can't ignore that. But also, I don't want to be like, well, I don't want to be the one Debbie Downer saying, hey, well, Anthony Donko is, because like I wasn't high on him to begin with because of some of the things I saw in high school, and I was just flat wrong about that. So I just also want to point it out where there's a lot of youth, and there's still a good amount of, we need to learn some stuff during spring football and training camp during the fall about how all this is really going to work out. And then, of course, the battle at center. I think everyone is looking at that because there isn't a clear succession plan right now. And, of course, the other open position being left tackle and Drew Shelton, and is he ready to take that next step and all of those things. Those are the obvious situations where the difference between this year and previous years, Jim, as you point out, is Drew Shelton's a four-star talent that played as a freshman. Nolan Rucci's coming in as a five-star with a lot of talent and a lot of room to grow and some non-development that happened at Wisconsin. Anthony Donko, we just mentioned him, and Javen Williams is a five-star, former five-star offensive lineman. So you have four tackles. We were like digging under rocks to find tackles previously. So it's a much better situation, but there is still that air of uncertainty where, you know, if you're looking at for hard evidence, there's a lot of positivity, but you can't say for a fact X is a lock at this point on the offensive line.
Well, what I like about it, T. Frank, and I always talk about this with quarterback position, Penn State versus Ohio State. Penn State brings in one five-star guy in Drew Aller. That's their one shot at it. Mm-hmm. Ohio State, they typically have three or four guys at quarterback of that level. So that's three or four bites at the apple. So that's what we're seeing at the offensive line, which I like. What I also appreciate is you mentioned a little bit the center position. I think Nick Dawkins is the leader in the clubhouse, at least right now. He's going to be the guy with the first shot at it, a veteran guy. He's gotten snaps. But you then have such a highly regarded young player in Cooper Cousins, who a lot of us are very excited about him. And, you know, I don't want to overstate it, T. Frank. He's still going to be a true freshman, a very young guy. But tell us about Cooper Cousins. Is the excitement legitimate about him?
It's funny because I want to start with what I've said previously and where the conversation has gone since then. I base a lot of my analysis and my predictions of the future based on what James Franklin has said in the past, his opinions, his perspective on things. It's easier to play guard than it is to play center or tackle, because center, you have a lot of mental responsibilities. You have a lot of things you have to account for. You have to be a leader on the offensive line where you have to have guys that are maybe 6-5 years older than you. They have to listen to you. At tackle, it's physically demanding. It's hard. So those, you know, guard is not easy. You still have to deal with big, strong defensive tackles, and you have to have grown man strength to play those positions. But from you don't have those other variables, right? So you have somebody on either side who can help you in a couple of different ways. So just generally, the path to the field is at guard first. And now Cooper Cousins is going to play center. Like, that right there should tell you exactly what you need to know about Cooper Cousins and the situation of James Franklin. To this point, I've never seen this particular conversation about a player. And the general view of offensive linemen and their ability to play the first year. He came in, Chuck Losey said he's been the best guy at keeping in contact with the strength and conditioning staff before getting to Penn State to know what was expected of him, to be ready to deliver when he got here. And he looks like it. Like, you see him in person, he is filled out, he's strong. Like, you just see an offensive lineman. You don't see a guy that needs to grow into being an offensive lineman. And then he talked about his leadership and how it's uncommon, how much he's holding his peers accountable, and how much he's talking kind of above his class. So those are great indications that he has an opportunity. And then from a physical standpoint, from a play standpoint, the only thing that I've really had like my eye on to see how he does at the next level is I feel like he's so aggressive at times that he can get a little bit over his toes. And even in pass protection, he can be a little too aggressive in his balance. But that's something he can work on, and that's something that is not preventative from him being good at football, even if it's not perfect as he starts. So he's just got a higher baseline starting point than any other offensive lineman we've seen come through Penn State in quite some time.
And the thing to remember is he should be in high school right now, T. Frank. Yep. Not out there facing off against 22-year-olds and 23-year-olds. Grown-up men, but he's doing that already. That bodes well for the future. Let's hit a couple of the other positions. Got to talk about running back. It's obvious what they have there with Nick Singleton and Catron Allen. A lot of talent that 99% of the other schools in the country would be jealous of.
Yep.
But we had this whole issue, explosive plays last year. We didn't see them, specifically about Nick Singleton, like we did in 22.
Yep.
Will Andy Kotelnicki help that? Will just natural development help that for Nick Singleton? What are we looking at there for more explosive plays from the running backs?
So this is something that I failed to say explicitly in my article earlier this week, but I think the player that stands to benefit the most from Andy Kotelnicki's offense is Nick Singleton. And the reason I didn't talk about I saved the running game, you know, not for my article about who stands to benefit the most. And I focused on the receiving part for the running backs, but you know, those motions and shifts and creating mistakes or angles from the defense for the offense's advantage gives you clean running lanes and gives you the ability to get on your horse. There were so many times last year where, you know, he had a lane, but everyone knew where the ball was going. That was one thing about last year's offense, and digging into the data, it was at exactly what I expected of. They ran a lot of base plays with no augmentations, no secondary concepts, no other things to catch the defense off guard. And that, I think, is indicative of the offensive line was really good at blocking on base plays last year. But when you're running a scheme where it's like, we know what's coming, we likely know what's coming, and we just have to be better than you on every single play, you fill a safety from instead of 10 yards down the field and you're meeting at maybe 7, Nick Singleton was seeing the safety at 4 or 5 yards. And that just wasn't conducive to his running style, where before he was outrunning that guy to the sideline and making big plays that way. So I think Kotelnicki's offense will produce more of these explosive plays because it's going to reintroduce more variety in the running concepts and the running schemes that they use. I think the pitch play is coming back. I think that the pin and pull, I think all of those things are on the table, and they should be, from what I've seen, done in a way that it makes sense, is effective, and gives the offensive blockers an advantage. Now, those blockers have to be good. They have to do their job, because I do think that there is a difference between a Big Ten defense and a Big 12 defense. And there is more emphasis on being good on defense in this conference. So it's not going to be perfect. It's not going to be a big run fest, but we're talking about the difference of maybe 5 plays a year. that can change games. And I think he can get back there. So yeah, I think for him specifically, this should be a massive step forward. And then from his perspective, what has he done to accentuate that from a running style and from a strength and conditioning standpoint? We saw him squat a truck, so we know he's strong enough to break tackles for sure.
What we also know is that problem, that issue has been identified, and you have this entire offseason for Andy Kotelnicki to see the problem and work on it. So that I'm going to stay away from the question of why didn't they identify it last year and do something about it. As you talked about, you know, the safeties inching up and not giving Nick Singleton much room, because there's a counter to everything, and the offense should have been able to counteract that, T. Frank, but they obviously did not. Let's go to the one last position that we didn't talk about, which is tight end. And I just keep saying this over and over again, T. Frank, they just seem to be built. It's a machine year after year. They graduate somebody who goes to the NFL, and then they bring in another guy who's going to be fourth maybe in the line of succession. But they just keep moving up every year, replacing every stud with another stud. That's what it looks like.
Yeah. So Tyler Warren is one of the guys who I think can benefit from this offense and some of the things we talked about of isolation against inferior defenders. Getting him open for catch and run opportunities is another thing of different aspects of this offense I really like, where it's, you know, you're using the natural tendencies of the defender and all those things we talked about. And suddenly they just, oh, damn. I forgot the tight end can also run a route because I'm looking at six other things. And there's a big opportunity for him to take so a more explosive role in the offense. He needs to be better at blocking. There needs to be, but I also think the offense can help with that. But straight up, he needs to be a stronger blocker against better opponents this year. And then it becomes, who does more of the other thing? Khalil Dinkins is a difference-making receiver where he's got receiver-like qualities as a tight end. Can he block? Where is he on that road? Andrew Rapelier, we talked about him. We saw him for a brief time last year, and I was wowed with the aggression and the strength he had for a freshman. How much is he ready to go, and how much can he catch? Like, what is his upper end on that side? Whoever is the guy that does the other thing better is the one who will see more snaps on offense opposite of Tyler Warren.
Very good, T. Frank. That's it for quarter number two. Stick around. Quarter three, your questions, and we ask T. Frank. Stay tuned. Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number three. We all know what that means. It's time to ask T. Frank. We take your questions for T. Frank. We answer them. And you know what? If you want to send your question to T. Frank, just download our app, Keystone Sports. That's it. Just download Keystone Sports, download the app. You'll see the Ask T. Frank button, and then away you go. All right, T. Frank, let's start with Victor in Erie, who says, T. Frank, Kalen King played so well in the 22 season, followed by a more pedestrian 2023 season and a disappointing combine.
Yep.
How do you account for that variance in performance?
I don't know. I really don't know. I loved Kalen King's game in 2022 because it was instinctive. He wasn't perfect. You know, like we saw him get toasted by Marvin Harrison Jr. in that game in 2022 as well. So it wasn't like it was just 2023 where that happened. You know, they just spread the wealth. They had Joey Porter Jr. So there was more, there was less emphasis on Kalen King. I felt like what I saw from him was, and this is just based on a brief conversation where he said he dove into more about what offenses were trying to do to the defense, route combinations, trying to understand football at a deeper level. I've talked about this on the show before. And to me, sometimes when you do that, you can think too much. You can overburden yourself if you haven't really committed to, I guess, the knowledge without hesitation, if that makes any sense. The other part of this that I can't, you know, it would be irresponsible for me to speculate on is how locked in was he, you know, like how locked in was he throughout this whole process? And you can ask those questions, but I don't know. I don't know the answer to those things. I would imagine that after a first bad month of the season, he might be more locked in, but it is one of the biggest mysteries. And one of those things that I think goes beyond X's and O's and goes beyond physical ability, and it gets to something deeper. And these are the areas where, you know, we may never find out, but we won't find out certainly for a while.
He had the next to last, as far as speed, running the 40 at the combine of the cornerbacks that were there.
Yep.
How critical is that?
I mean, it took him from we were talking about him as a guy who could go potentially in the first round last year. And that was a bit of a stretch because of his size and because of some of these testing metrics. And he doesn't have length. He doesn't have speed. He doesn't have the overall height or any of those things. But he was just really good at football. And then he wasn't really good at football this past year. He wasn't good in any particular scheme. He was great against man coverage in 2022. He had one of the best overall profiles when you look at the data and, you know, the productivity, batting the ball away, interceptions. And you look at the film and he's running routes for guys. Now, Daquan Hardy was doing that this year, where he was running routes for receivers and being in position to catch the football. Suddenly, Kalen King wasn't doing that. I don't know that there was a big change in responsibilities from last year to this year. But now we're talking about him as a guy who probably is a zone-only corner, is maybe a safety, is what some people are talking about, and is definitely not a day-two pick. So he went from second round pick, I felt pretty strongly about that, to big old question mark. He'll be drafted. I think he's still a football player. He's still going to be a good football player in the NFL. I can't unsee the good things that he can do on defense. But I still think he's a starter, but he's definitely a guy that is going to be like a draft steal in maybe the fifth round. I don't know. I don't know where he goes now.
It'll be interesting to see where he does go and how he ends up. As you said, there's obviously talent there. I mean, we all saw it. So yeah. Let's hope he can get that back. Okay, let's go. Oh, this is kind of a fun question for you, T. Frank. Ed from Gettysburg says, T. Frank, I know you are a totally dedicated football guy. Do you have any interest in any other sports? Will you be watching March Madness? Jim, same question for you.
You should check out the Penn State Wrestling Show here on the YouTube channel and the Penn State Hoops Show here on the Blue Light Illustrated YouTube channel. That's my answer.
Okay, come on. Let's forget the official word, the company line, T. Frank. Just you personally. Nobody else around. What's the sport that you love to watch beyond football? Or is there one? Football scouting. You won't be watching March Madness?
Probably not. I never really have. Jim, this sets me up to fail. Like, I love football. I'm here because I wanted to talk about football. When I grew up, like when I was 15 years old, I wanted to be on the NFL Network. And everyone's like, oh, you want to be on the ESPN? I'm like, no, I don't want to talk about other sports. I want to talk about football. I do a football show. I have experts for wrestling and basketball that know all the things, and I just lob softballs for them to hit out of the park. So I know basketball a little bit better than another sport. As a kid, I used to watch the NBA. I know a little more about basketball. Not a whole lot. And I have watched Penn State basketball over the last 7 years, but I did that journalistically. It's my job to do that. I wouldn't say that like I'm dying to see basketball. And like, here I am in trouble. This is going to get me in trouble with all the people that love hoops. And I want to make sure those guys get the absolute best show that they can when they come to Blue White Illustrated. But I think they know at this point, they're not coming to me for any of those answers.
You know what, T. Frank? I enjoy some other sports. If you're a listener of the show, you know that I'm a Mets fan. I like baseball. I don't like NBA basketball anymore. I like college hoops. I will be watching March Madness. I like the drama of it, the one and done. But there are other sports. Because I'm a Penn Stater, I'll watch wrestling because I have the rooting interest. But believe me, I need Jeff Byers on the show to talk about wrestling. So Let's move on. Let's get to Carl in Altoona, who says, T. Frank, could you give us a scouting report on the two transfer portal cornerbacks? Are both expected to be part of the rotation?
Jalen Kimber is. AJ Harris is TBD. I think he's fighting for a role in the two deep, but there are established guys and some young players that are going to be fighting with him for that. So AJ Harris is a physical guy. I think he's got good size, good speed. I wouldn't say elite speed. And there's a lot of speculation here because it's a couple of, I watched all of his plays from last year at Georgia. Where he struggled was shadowing receivers down the field in man coverage. Now he's a freshman. And he was also in the slot for some of that stuff. So what is literally two or three plays and what is indicative of his overall skill set? I think he is going to be a good corner for Penn State. I think he fits really well into the hierarchy of what Penn State has brought in. I think he maintains the standard of talent, but he isn't a guy like Joey Porter Jr. that could be. And it, by the way, I shouldn't even say that. Like, I don't know what the upper end of his talent is at this point. He is very young. He has a lot of talent. But what is his overall profile? Jalen Kimber is a very athletic player that I don't know always plays with instinct the way you would like. And he's not particularly big, but he has great feet, great athleticism. And you hope that if he's in this system, he's going to battle for one of the three deep, I would say, as a starting corner with veteran experience in the SEC. Can he battle with those big physical Big Ten receivers? And by the way, like the Big Ten now includes Oregon and Washington. So I got to update my cliches and my stereotypes here. I think he's a good football player. He could benefit from having a better pass rush this year, but he's never been a standout at any one particular place. And he's transferred a couple times. So good football player that I think can help Penn State. We'll see if he starts or if he is a rotational player. And then a guy that I think has long-term starting potential at Penn State.
Okay, T. Frank, by the way, that's you again, sounding like an old man. Yo, the Big Ten, 3 yards in a cloud of dust. Again, you're...
I can't get over Marvin Harrison Jr. Like, we started talking about Kalen King, and I'm just imagining AJ Harris going up against a 6'3" receiver that can stop on a dime and moss people. And I'm just like, the freaks at Ohio State are a real thing. Like, that's really what I'm saying is, like, can he cover the freaks in the conference? Because there are freaks in this conference. And I think that's the question. I think he's a good receiver that can cover most, he's a good corner that can cover most receivers. But, you know, when they go up against the best of the best, we'll find out. We'll find out if all that athletic movement skill and the elite testing numbers and all those things, we'll see what they mean on the football field. But he's got those skills. Can Terry Smith make that translate better than any other position where he's been in previously at other schools?
Okay, T. Frank, let's move on. Let's go to Steve in Columbia. And by the way, just a little note to you, T. Frank. Steve is one of a handful of listeners we have who, when they send questions in, they essentially send an entire book, a novel to us for the question. So I have to, they say, lightly edit it. So I'm going to try and pick out the gist of the question. T. Frank, please explain coaching to me. Yes, points are the most important factor in winning and losing, but time is hugely important, and coaches just don't understand that. Please save your timeouts. Don't waste them in the first or third quarter to avoid a 5-yard delay of game penalty. For the most part, take the points. James Franklin says when we went against Ohio State and Michigan, we went for it on our side of the 50 because we needed points. Well, we could have had three, but we got none and ended up giving 7 points the other way. And he narrows this down to his question is, does emotion overtake thinking in these games?
So I don't have an answer for this, Jim. Because Stephen Columbia gave you the answer in the question, which is why it was a manifesto. I also don't necessarily look at that stuff when I'm watching games, because I've said this 1,000 times, I'm breaking down the plays. I'm trying to determine the schemes and situations that put you in these situations for time management and et cetera. I would also disagree. There are plenty of reasons to take a timeout that all kinds of great coaches do in the NFL and in college football, where you're in a really bad situation. Maybe it isn't a 5-yard penalty. Maybe you snap the ball and it's intercepted. You're trying to avoid negative plays, whatever they might be. So I disagree that you should never take a timeout for that. I also have so many other things that we don't have time to get into about, you know, punting and all of that stuff. Like, I'll just say that I don't have an answer to this question. I still don't think it is a question, because it's not just emotion. It is about things that Steve just doesn't want to acknowledge exist when it comes to analytics and data.
Very good, T. Frank. We are out of time in quarter three. I want to throw in my 2 cents, which I'm going to do when we get back for the start of quarter number four. And welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number four. He's T. Frank. I'm Jim. And you know what? We just finished up quarter three, which, excuse me, was our Ask T. Frank segment. And Steve from Columbia asked the question about, he was being critical of James Franklin and coaches in general. And it came across funny to me that his final question to this, T. Frank, was, does emotion overtake the coaches? I actually think it's the opposite. I think it's emotion overtaking Steve and the fans when a coach does something that they don't agree with or it's not successful. If James Franklin went for it on Penn State's side of the 50 on a 4th-and-1 and was successful, it's a great call. And if he doesn't make it, he's an idiot. He used emotion. The fact is, analytics probably said to do it. And James Franklin is a smart analytical guy, and he's using analytics. And the last example I want to bring up was the game, I think it was Michigan, when they were down 15 points. And instead of waiting for to go for two, he went for two and didn't make it. And everybody was up in arms on it. About it, because why don't you just kick the extra point? Because that would have kept you within one score. When actually the analytics say you do go for 2 points the first go round. I'm not going to go into the explanation why, but that's what analytics tells you.
Yeah.
Everyone would have been patting him on the back if they succeeded, but because they didn't, everyone said, what is James Franklin thinking? And he's obviously not a great game day coach, T. Frank.
Yeah. And so sitting here thinking about it in the break, one of the things that I've talked about, we've talked about this before, Jim, possessions are important. So you make the example of the Ohio State game and the Michigan game. Late in the game, they needed to score points and they only had so many times they're going to get the ball back. The defense has been on the field. I think the emotion is our defense is gassed because our offense hasn't been out there. So we need to score now because we need to put some game pressure on Michigan to actually throw the football, which they didn't have to do in that game. And yes, the very next play, they scored a 30-yard touchdown. If they punt, do they lose by 7 less points? And do you end up in the same spot? So, I mean, the biggest problem I had against Ohio State was they kept running outside zone and Hunter Norzai was getting blown in the backfield because they're asking him to reach block a 315-pound monster who just bulldozed him. And like, that was their plan and they didn't adjust it. So to me, that's what puts you in a situation where all of this stuff comes up, because the actual game plan and what I was talking about is like, I'm focused on those things where you're in this situation where you're talking about timeouts and all those things because you haven't scored enough points, because you haven't put any game pressure on the other team to actually do something out of their comfort zone. And that's been really what happened this year, is Penn State never got the other team out of their comfort zone offensively so their defense could eat. And that has nothing to do with timeouts. And that's what I focus on. And I think that's why you look at the change in offensive coordinator. It's not about, and I understand James Franklin is going to fire himself. And that's kind of Steve in Columbia is what, that's what he wants. But that's, you know, to me, the larger picture I'm looking at. And so timeout usage is obviously important. It's going to change, by the way, with 2-minute warnings. We're going to see how that changes all of those decisions. But I also just don't have time for that. There are experts out there like Steve who knows more about timeout usage than I do. And I focus on the things I'm good at.
Well, again, I'll point out that timeout, what you did, that pointing out how important each possession is. And if you're at a 3rd-and-1 situation And if you let the clock run out and all of a sudden it becomes third and six, I'm not adverse to using that timeout to maintain the possession. But you better make the first down then if you're at third and one.
Right.
Because if you don't, yes, it is a wasted first down. All right, T. Frank, let's get back to where we were supposed to be with our spring preview. We left ourselves one segment and now, well, maybe two-thirds of a segment to talk about the defensive side of the ball. And let's start with the obvious there. New coordinator, Tom Allen. What are we going to see different because Tom Allen is there instead of Manny Diaz?
We've talked about this, but if you're just tuning in because you weren't here in the off season and you're kind of waking up from your football hibernation, welcome back. Super excited to have you. Subscribe to the Blue Audio Illustrated YouTube channel. We'd love to have you here. It's going to be aggressive in a different way. Simpler up front, more complex in the back is just the easy shortcut for what I would say the personality difference is. Manny Diaz had complex schemes on the backside of his, you know, in coverage and rotations and things like that. Tom Allen majors in that, changing the window, trying to get the ball from the other team, and doing it aggressively with safeties. So that was the biggest change for this defense from a personality standpoint. I'm interested to see how that simplicity up front either helps a defensive line that used that complexity to be aggressive and get into the backfield, or is it going to be simple, kind of like we talked about with the offense? Everyone knows they're going to be, so it's easier to block you. So what happens up front, and what do they do from that perspective to make sure they maintain that advantage of being very strong in the trenches is what they were in 2023.
T. Frank, I want to ask you about something that you and I have discussed a bit on this show previously, but I think it's the most fascinating thing and the biggest question. Now, on defense, most folks want to talk about Abdul Carter moving to defensive end. I feel pretty good about that. I feel pretty good about the tackles. I feel pretty good about the defensive backs, the cornerbacks they'll figure out, the safeties are good. They've got a couple of good linebackers, but it's that, is it going to be the third linebacker or a third safety? You talk about that 11th player being the variable. What do you think we're going to see there? Or maybe the better question is, instead of you predicting what we're going to see, what are the options for us to see for that 11th defender?
Yeah, so it's kind of, I'll take it even a step further back and do a little bit of a big picture of different styles of defense and what we've seen in the past. You can also have a corner out there. Like, for example, and I know I try not to talk about the Bills a whole lot, but Taron Johnson is the Bills slot corner and third linebacker. He's essentially their Sam linebacker. And that's important to me because Manny Diaz ran a similar system before at Miami and at Penn State before Abdul Carter. So all these things are on the table. If you've got the best player available, you play that player. So corner is also on the table in any defense that wants to play with two linebackers. The question is that corner good enough against the run? In the NFL, you see corners filling the A gap thanks to Andy Kotelnicki style offenses that make you shift and bend. And this is one of the examples of putting guys in positions to fail if you're an offensive coordinator, breaking the defense by making these adjustments. So that's going to be the task of the defense, is finding guys that can withstand the rigor of those things. It's different in the NFL than it is in college. But generally, it doesn't come down to a one-to-one equation. But Zaki Wheatley is a third safety. And however you want to combine those three safeties of Jalen Reed, KJ Winston, Zaki Wheatley versus three linebackers is presumably what's going to go on this spring of Tony Rojas, Kobe King, and then there's going to be a position battle within a larger position battle of Kavion Keys and Keon Wiley. That's my assumption of who's going to be that will linebacker in the spring, knowing that what we know, Tony Rojas is probably going to be playing Sam. I still don't buy that's the case because I think that he's going to play both of those positions. But if you're in a three linebacker set and he's the only guy that can play Sam as a pure linebacker, knowing that Dom DeLuca is a hybrid player, who's that third linebacker? So they've got to have a competition, and then that player has to be better on average than the three safeties to make it a traditional Penn State 3-4-3 with three linebackers. Moving Abdul Carter to defensive end, I think is a signal of what their long-term plan is. They didn't have to move him there, right? So I understand that there's a conversation about what's best for Abdul, and they typically default to what's best for the player. But they didn't have to move him. Like, you can still use him as a hybrid player and have him be a linebacker. So I think that should give you an indication of where these things are leaning. But this, if nothing else, is a fair, from what I've seen, coaching staff that will open up the competition and say whoever is best will get the philosophical lion's share of snaps. Who's going to be the base defense? So that's what I'm watching this spring in those sub package situations and kind of filling out the defense from there.
And we also got to be aware that there's situational things going on too, where it's not going to always be these 11 guys on the field. I would joke that last year they had approximately 20 starters on defense because that's how they use guys. They would rotate them in. Let's talk a little bit about Abdul Carter going to the defensive end. Me personally, I like it, T. Frank, because it puts probably your best pass rusher in a position to rush the passer most of the time. Am I oversimplifying it?
No. I think that, you know, you want to have your best players making the most impact possible. And you can have elite linebackers. We saw Micah Parsons be a difference maker from that same position, but he's a defensive end and he's a game wrecker in the NFL. So defensive end is typically where you can do the most damage. Linebacker, again, we talk about what offenses do in modern football is they make linebackers wrong most of the time. Like, it's tough to be a linebacker. So putting him at defensive end allows him to play fast. It allows him to use his natural skills and instincts to attack offensive linemen, shed blocks, get in the backfield, et cetera. And then, you know, provides a speed and explosiveness element, guy that runs a 4.5 and it's 250 pounds. And who knows where he'll be? Like, does he want to be play 255? Does he want to play at 260? I think he's got the frame. He could do that. You know, he's everything you want in the position. He's been playing at 250 because he's a linebacker. I don't think there's a wrong answer with him from a physical and technical, you know, all the things that go into making him a good defensive end. Just the learning curve will be there. There'll be some things he's got to learn, but overall, this is an area where you're putting your best player in likely the best position for him to make maximum impact. And we saw Chop Robinson, his impact on the defense was massive last year. And if you've got him, if you've got two of those guys in Denai Dennis Sutton and Abdul Carter, yeah, you're cooking with gas at this point.
Cooking with gas. Again, an old guy expression there, T. Frank. I love it.
I was also raised by old people. I just want to say I was raised by very old people. So I come by it honestly.
All right. Very quickly, in the half minute we have left, who's the player on defense we're not talking about enough?
Kobe King. And by the way, before we get to the end of the show, I just want to applaud us, you know, some behind the scenes stuff. This is about the seventh quarter we've done today because we had so many technical difficulties. If you see Jim is in a different position and looks different on camera, my camera died at one point. I don't know if I've been able to edit it out of this or not, but I'm happy that we made it here. Kobe King, we took for granted the fact that he turned into a very good linebacker halfway through last year. And then just kind of forgot about it. And some people still don't think he's fast enough to play linebacker, but he's a very good Mike linebacker. He's going to be very important to this defense next year.
His improvement from 22 to 23, I thought, was one of the big stories of the defense last year. All right, T. Frank, that's it for the show. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.